I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Friends with Friends. My name's Pete, here's Dave.
Ahoy, hoy, Peter. How are we?
Yeah, I'm all good. I mean, you ask anyone on Patreon's just heard me say that I'm absolutely fine.
Yes, it's worth subscribing to hear Pete's dream from last night.
Yeah.
People
talking about their dreams is usually really boring, but like, who gives a shit? Apart from when it's me talking about the dreams, and then it's really interesting.
It's incredibly boring. Hey, one thing we haven't talked about yet, though, since I spoke to you today, is that you were on Radio 1 this morning talking to a man about Samuel L. Jackson's chips or something. What?
Yeah.
Talk me through it.
This keeps happening. Like, I do generally do a serious job, and then whenever I do stuff that isn't quite as serious, it seems to end up seems to end up on Radio 1. Like I used to be before I became washed up. I went out and about. They're filming the next Disney Plus Marvel Studios TV series in parts of West Yorkshire at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
And Samuel L. Jackson was here, and I went to Halifax, where they are doing some filming, and asked people if they'd seen Samuel L. Jackson. And one person happened to be eating chips at the time, and I said, would you let Samuel L. Jackson have one of your chips? And he said, well, if he signed the box that the chips was in, then he'd let him have one. So that ended up on the Radio 1 breakfast show with Greg James.
Oh, that's almost as exciting as your dream.
But the weirdest thing is, because this in my line of work, this has happened like, I'd say like a fair few times, right? That something that I do for the BBC somehow ends up on, you know, on Radio 1 in Newsbeat, yeah, whatever. And the weirdest thing is that the first you hear about it is when people text you or message you or tweet you being right, like, I've just heard you on Radio 1. And my immediate response to that would be sort of quite deep concern, because I'd be like, but why? What have I done? Yeah, I've not done anything for them. Right. So I had to dig out the context. But yeah, that's what it was. Samuel L. Jackson and some chips.
Well, there you go. Have you seen Samuel L. Jackson this week?
No, but my friend saw him in Leeds City Centre yesterday.
Oh, what was he doing?
Filming. He was actually doing the scenes. But apparently he went to he went to some restaurant in Huddersfield, apparently, yesterday.
Okay.
So,
well, there you go. That makes a bit of sight celebrity spotting. Always exciting, isn't it?
It is.
That's good news. All right, well done. Should we talk about Friends?
Yeah, okay.
It's a double requester this week, isn't it, Peter?
It is. Can I make an apology first?
Yeah.
Because both the people who've requested this episode have very kindly sent us quizzes.
A double quiz.
But one of them, who very kindly emailed me the quiz, I don't know what I've done with that email.
Oh, no.
So they did a quiz, and I have lost it. But to be fair, if we were to do two quizzes, we'd be here all fucking week, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I'll tell you what. Here's a thing. Between now and the end of the week, resend us the quiz and we'll do the quiz on correspondence. How about that?
Okay, fine.
That's good, isn't it? Because then we can split the quizzes up. So we've got a single quiz, is that right?
Yes, we have a quiz, yeah.
Great. Okay, and the quiz is presumably from Kerry Anna, because she's not the person that said, I want to email you the quiz, right?
Yeah.
So Kerry Anna sent a quiz. So here's Kerry Anna's request. Hey, Pete, and ahoy, hoy, Dave. Very nice to have personalised greetings.
Why do I get a different greeting?
Well, you don't say ahoy, hoy, do you?
Well, no, but I might want to receive one.
Well, you should put the effort. You know, you got to give a little to take a little, Pete, as it were. You know, you got to give something back to, what's the phrase? You know what I mean? It's all take and no give. No. I'm not entirely sure. I told you I fell asleep earlier.
Okay.
I'd like to nominate Series 8, Episode 18, the one in Massapequa. Some great lines in there. I'm not going to read them out, actually, because we can feature them in the end of the episode's best lines bit, can't we? It's a great Jack and Judy episode also, and shows the dynamics of their relationship with Ross and Monica perfectly. And I can send you a quiz, even though my name isn't Amy. I'm sure it'll be fine. Well, we'll be the judge of that, Kerry. But at least we do have your quiz. Thanks, Kerry. And a second request from Chris, who says, ahoy, hoy. Oh, there you go. You got your hoy, hoy. That was to both of us. Love the podcast as always. I feel sorry for season 8. So my selection is the one in Massapequa, otherwise known as the one with the zesty guy. Is that what it's otherwise known as? Or have you just said that?
No, it does. It does have two names.
Does it? Mm. There you go. You learn something new every day. I really enjoy this one, despite representing Monica's nadir in the whole series, largely because of Alec Baldwin's great performance as Parker. This was 4 years before 30 Rock, and he spent most of his career as a heartthrob in thrillers and dramas, so something of a revelation, probably set him up for the next 20 years. There's also nice work from Rachel and Ross in their subplot, and of course, extra points for a Jack and Judy episode. My favourite line in the episode is, no, I'm not going to say it again, we'll save it for the bit at the end. That's good. I'm glad that you're all saying your favourite lines now, even though you requested this before we started doing that bit. That is some thinking ahead shit, isn't it, Pete?
I know, right?
I hope you get to my request before too long. Well, it's been that long that Pete's lost the email, Chris, so I'd say we haven't achieved that.
Look, we got to your request. It's just that the quiz was collateral damage along the way.
Yes, exactly. Look forward to hearing your thoughts on the episode. And I've got a quiz to send you. How do I do that? Email ? I'd say for a future reference, no.
Maybe you never actually sent it.
Yeah, maybe. Did you not reply?
No, hang on. I can't say that because that's me excusing myself. And it's probably more likely that I just lost the quiz.
Well, even if he never sent it, it's because you probably never sent him your email address. So it's your fault either way, I'd guess.
Probably.
You know? So there you go. All right, then. So season 8, episode 18, the one in Massapequa. Here is the Wikipedia synopsis. And you're quite right. It does. The one with the zesty guy is the alternative title given. 227418, prod code. Monica botches an attempt at giving a heartfelt speech for her parents' 35th anniversary. Phoebe dates Parker, who's an overly enthusiastic about everything, which ultimately annoys the entire group, including herself. And Ross and Rachel have to pretend to be married at the Geller's anniversary party. And Ross's wedding toast stirs feelings in Rachel. Interesting way of putting it. Special guest Alec Baldwin as Parker. We should address the elephant in the room, shouldn't we, before we crack on.
The Alec Baldwin elephant.
Yes, yeah. Al elephant. I mean, there's not really an element. It's just when these were requested, it was certainly before the Alec Baldwin incident. And obviously that's an entirely separate thing and horrible. And our thoughts and feelings go out to everybody who was involved in that. And the whole thing is just
stuff a nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely nightmarish on everyone's behalf. But for the purposes of the podcast, we'll just focus on Alec Baldwin's performance in this episode. I think that's the best way to do it, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah.
Yes. Okay, well, I mean, there's not really different plots in this. I mean, there are sort of mini subplots, but it kind of all melds into one, doesn't it? But we've got the sort of subplot of Monica trying to make her parents cry and Ross and Rachel grifting their parents' friends for money.
They've got quite the con going on, haven't they?
They really have, haven't they? Like, they wanted to, let's start with that briefly then, because they wanted to have nothing to do with Jack and Judy's, let's face it, quite mad plan to just tell their parents. What is it in Friends with people just telling people a thing? Because it happens at Barry and Mindy's wedding, you know, like, they just told all their parents that Rachel had syphilis.
Yeah.
And that's why she ran out of the wedding, and nobody ever questioned it. And now Jack and Judy are just sort of telling... I mean, it wouldn't really work in the days of social media, would it? Because everybody would be like, well, what the fuck's happened here? Well, there's no pictures, nothing's gone on. But it's even without social media, it's a bold gambit, isn't it?
Also, the whole cause of the party is a 35th wedding anniversary, which feels like an odd one to mark with a party.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Like, I'm sure 35th is a thing, but still...
Well, and this also brings us on to a correction from must be a correction, because weren't we talking about how it was Jack Geller's 50th birthday last week?
He was about like 15 when he got married.
No, although that was 6 years earlier, to be fair, wasn't it? So I guess that might be. They still got married very young, though, either way, didn't they?
Yeah.
I'm 21 at best. 2021, yeah.
And the one thing that I thought with this is that there's one point where Judy says, she makes a judgmental comment about Ross and Rachel having a baby out of wedlock, right?
Yeah.
But in another episode of Friends, isn't there a joke where Jack says that the only reason they got engaged was because he knocked up Judy or something?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
They basically did much the same thing.
Judy Geller is a strange character, isn't she? Because I'll go into bat for Jack Geller all day, and Judy kind of often gets bundled in as a double act with Jack and Judy, you know?
Mm.
And they're very funny together. But actually, on her own, she's a bit of a dick,
not
isn't
very
she?
Pleasant. Yeah.
She's not a very nice woman. Like, she's awful to Monica, always. Like, especially in the early seasons. And even now, she just... There's not much love there, is there, you know?
I also... There's a photo of Jack and Judy on a stand in the background of the party.
Oh, I've got so much to say about the photo.
It's a photo of them in the same clothes that they're currently wearing.
Yeah.
So have they had a photo taken and then instantly had it printed on some sort of board?
Well, no, because if you look closely at the photo, Pete, it's taken in front of Monica's fridge.
Is it?
So they've just used that set, clearly.
Love that.
And it's in Monica and Rachel's apartment, so... Yeah, they've worn the exact outfits before to take a quite formal, you know, quite a professional photo, and then have that blown up. And I just think it's weird to have a giant picture of yourself at any occasion.
It's very, in Succession when Kendall has his party and he has the word Kendall right. on stage.
Yeah.
It's a little bit along those lines, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and Kendall is insane.
Yeah.
And Jack and Judy are not portrayed as being quite as sort of egotistical and insane, but they've still decided this is the thing we need, you know?
I think that was the first ever Succession reference on this podcast.
Was it really?
Quite possibly. I don't remember one before.
That's surprising. Well, there you go. Well, I guess we're not doing a podcast about Succession, aren't we?
I would like to put forward the hypothesis.
Okay, please.
That anyone described as having a zest for life is irritating.
This is ultimately the problem with Parker, isn't it? And I find this episode interesting because it's I think Alec Baldwin is brilliant in this. Like, every line he delivers is wonderful, but as a character, he is almost impossible to spend any time. You know, like you would not last more than about 20 seconds with that person.
The kind of mind-blowing thing about Parker is our first encounter of him is the insane level of confidence that Parker has to kind of like command the room in front of all of Phoebe's friends, like instantly upon meeting them all. Like, he instantly makes himself center of attention, which is so like bold.
But it sort of works, I think, doesn't it? At least with everybody that isn't... Like, Ross and Rachel make reference to, like, oh, let's hang back and get a different cab. But they all seem to go for it and smile. You know, like, they all seem to be having a nice time initially. And I think it's quite a... The Chandler joke he makes, you know, he's got very deep psychological understanding of the friends by the first time he's met them all, hasn't he?
Yeah, classic Ross bit's great.
Classic Ross, and then, which I presume is like a sort of a callback to the one where no one's ready, you know, because it's like the same moment, the same bit of the kitchen where he's like, we've got to go, he looks at his watch. And he gets Chandler enough to know that he wouldn't want to be forgotten about, and he, you know, and then he goes, don't worry, you're my favourite. And he's really like, what him and Phoebe have talked about, I do not know up to this point. The main interesting thing, though, is that Phoebe gets very quickly disillusioned with Parker, doesn't she?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it takes less than a day. But this is not their first date.
No, because... does she mention that she's been out with him before?
Yeah, like, because she refers to both him treating her very nicely and also to, like, an implied quite filthy sex life with yeah. him, you know? That they have, which is not something I particularly wanted to picture. But,
no, me neither.
But she sort of... She talks as if... Now, they met in the previous episode, didn't they, in the dry cleaners. But it would appear that enough time has passed that they've been on a couple of dates at least and spent quite a lot of time together. And she doesn't seem to have even clocked that he's a little bit OTT. Because if you were introducing someone like Parker to your friendship group, you would absolutely say, guys, he's lovely, but he's a bit over the top. So just bear that in mind. But just, you know, it's an insecurity thing or whatever. You try and justify it, wouldn't you?
I think as well, you know when Phoebe notices them sort of taking the mick out of him?
Yeah.
And she says something like, friends don't like do that about the people you date. Yeah, they do. Like, friends do critique people you date. Like, that's kind of their job.
They spent years basically mocking Janice.
Yeah.
All of them. Like, they're all famously awful about and to Janice, weren't they?
Although, who is the good friend who goes and apologises to Phoebe on behalf of everyone?
Joey.
Yet again.
Always the best friend, isn't he?
Yeah, a very sincere apology. And he's like, oh, I'll really make an effort. He seems like a really good guy.
Yeah, and what Joey doesn't even do is... Because Joey wasn't really even involved in that. He could have easily got away with going like... You know, I didn't join in with that, but he just goes, we were jerks, we're sorry. He really takes the fall, admits to the mistake and goes, let's be good friends from now on. Yeah, you just got a lot of time for Joey the more you analyse his behaviour, haven't you?
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think Phoebe would have noticed and clocked before they go to the, let's face it, weird situation where you're bringing a relatively new person you're seeing to your best friend's parents' wedding anniversary out of town.
Yeah, and also taking them presents as well.
Yeah, a lot going on. There's a lot going on with that. All this classic friends, like, needs a reason to be in a place or be doing a thing, but it's a fairly big stretch that they'd all be at Jack and Judy's 35th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
Which is obviously quite a formal and expensive affair, you know?
Oysters. How far is
Event Room C
Massapequa from New York?
Well, like, centre of New York. Pete, isn't it?
So, yeah. Hang on, I've got my map out.
Just Google Maps Greenwich Village to Massapequa, that's what I'm interested in. Yeah, interestingly... There's a little hidden nugget in this episode of Parker saying, Massapequa sounds like a magical place, I've never been. But Alec Baldwin was born in Massapequa.
Was he?
Grew up there. Well, born quite close by and grew up in Massapequa, yeah. So take that. Take that for your pub quizzes.
It's an hour-long drive.
How do they get there, talking of the drive?
Well, isn't Monica driving?
Monica's driving, but there's been no discussion of the fact that cars don't hold seven people, but she's just grabbed the keys and Parker's assumed he's driving with them, and then Rachel and Ross talk about getting separate cabs. So it's just a slightly weird... I just don't understand what's happening there.
No, I know what you mean.
Like, Monica's driving, but it seems to be five of them go with Monica in her quite small Porsche. I don't know. And then Ross and Rachel hang back and get a separate cab, yet arrive earlier than the rest of them.
Sorry, I'm just looking at Massapequa on a map still.
That's fine, you enjoy yourself. Anything to bring to the table before I press a little bit of music?
Hang on, let's about zoom Massapequa. In.
Just about Massapequa in general, the geography of it, you know? That's what I'm interested in.
There's a nature reserve, which is lovely. Nice. It's sort of halfway between Manhattan and the Hamptons.
Okay.
The out posh bit. Is it? That's all I have to add.
Good to learn about Massapequa.
Isn't it?
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So then we've got this whole Monica wanting to make the toast, and I think Chris referenced it in his request about how this is a bit of a Monica and a Deer moment, and it's, I feel like Monica's character isn't very well served by this storyline. It's just weird and unbecoming, isn't it? It doesn't paint her in a good light at all.
The odd thing is that Monica confuses causing people to be emotional with causing people to be upset. So she sort of actively wants to distress and upset them rather than move them.
That's exactly it, isn't it? That's exactly what it is. She's not trying to appeal to their heartstrings. So that's sort of like watching a rom-com tear in your eye. She's going for, you know, like, as I can't remember which character says it, but someone says, I could just hold them down. You could basically punch them
to
death.
Chandler,
you know?
Yeah, Chandler says that.
You know? Yeah. And it's like, that is kind of seems to be what she's going for, to just to like you say, to emotionally hurt and damage them.
I do think Courtney Cox is like really good in this episode though, because the whole bit with I find all the stuff about Monica being like the lesser sibling to Ross and how sort of cruelly that manifests itself in how other people talk about her and treat her. I find that really funny. I find that side of Monica really funny. So yeah. I think the bit like the groan when she gets up and says that she's doing the toast, that's really funny. And like I just find second favourite Monica to be a really good part of her as a character.
Yeah, and it's a good dynamic, isn't it? Because it's only really with Judy, isn't it? Like, her and Jack do have, like, quite a nice father-daughter relationship, you know, even from right at the start when she breaks up with Richard and Jack comes round. And, you know, like, they have, in that weird scene that we discussed with his hat at the end of last episode. But, you know, he's always checking in on her and he comes round to comfort her, doesn't he, you know? And he gives her the Porsche and all that sort of stuff. But Judy's treatment of Ross as the sort of the medical marvel and Monica as... not even second favour, like almost a regret.
Yeah, like disliked,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, like actively treats her like shit.
Like the revelation as well that they paid for surgery for the dog over braces for her and things.
Right, exactly. I mean, although to be fair, the similar revelation that
she crushed
quite
the dog.
Large Monica chose to ride the dog whilst carrying a lot more than a little holiday weight, that's what I would say. Is a whole thing. But I guess Monica's acting out as a kid. You know, parents are treating her like absolute garbage, so she's going to go, oh, I'll ride the dog, see what happens.
It's true.
You can never tell what's prompting a child's behaviour, can you? But yeah, you're right. That is such a funny dynamic to witness, and it does bring out a strange side of Monica, which, like you say, Courtney Cox plays really well. She's great in it. It's just Monica's character is a bit, oh God, what are you doing?
One of my favourite bits of it is when she mentions Romanian orphans who are incapable of love. It's like gone so far into desperation to cause some emotion that she's dragging up some terrible stories about.
But it does then lead us to sort of Ross. I mean, the way Ross makes everyone cry is by being touching and nice, like you say. So he's just understood the assignment in hand rather than just trying to take them down.
And there's that great bit at the end when Ross unintentionally makes Monica cry as well, when he's talking about, you know, we did learn love from them.
Yeah, yeah. The speech itself is horrifically cringeworthy, isn't it? Like, it's horrible to watch. It's one of those moments where you go, oh God, oh, not this, oh God, not more.
Yeah.
And watching Jack and Judy's face is very funny. But then Jack trying to, actually we'll save this because this is Chris's favourite line of the episode, but Jack's reaction to the dog and Chi-Chi and all that sort of stuff is very funny in return.
By the way, have you noticed that it's very timely, but there have been a couple of viral stories about this episode knocking about this week, and it's all to do with someone who's in one of the shots that shouldn't be. Have you seen this?
Oh, no. What is it? Is it the Jack Geller stand-in?
Yeah, the Jack Geller stand-in, who I think he's talking to Ross and Rachel at the time, and then suddenly a different person appears next to them. But there is an explanation for it, because they are all shot. The versions of Friends that we see these days are sort of wider angles than were ever on telly originally.
It's all shot in the old before widescreen, isn't it? So we've had there's that shot of Monica on the couch in a different episode and stuff as well, isn't there? Which is a completely different woman. But I haven't actually seen the screenshot. So has that been doing the rounds?
Yeah, this week. I've noticed it a couple of times.
Jack Geller, stand in.
By the way, it's someone who doesn't even look remotely like Jack Geller.
Well, I guess before the widescreen thing, it literally wouldn't have been someone in.
Yeah, you'd have seen like a little bit of arm or something, and that's it.
Right, exactly. Oh my God, yeah. It doesn't look anything like him. It's so different. Not even the same height, which is what you'd think they'd go for, you know? So, yeah, well, look, Pete, no one's saying we take a long time to get round to our requests, Pete. We're just saving them for the week that they're the most topical.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is our justification for all of this forever. So, you're absolutely welcome. Before we get on to the sort of finish the Ross and Rachel bit, one of the finest bits of this whole episode for me is Joey trying to cry on cue.
Yeah.
Right at the start, before we even get to the party.
And then excusing the fact that he can't do it.
Can't do it when people are watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's perfect Joey, and it's a really nice throwback to the early seasons where we get a lot of, you know, Joey Tribbiani being bad as an actor, which kind of tails off a little bit more towards the end of the show, doesn't it? But just watching him proclaim, oh, I can cry on cue, and then just watching his process, even if he'd managed to cry, not a very slick process to get there as an actor, is it?
Yeah, really good.
And then his sort of tantrum line, yeah, I can't do it while you're all watching, is very funny. So we'll just finish off this bit about Ross and Rachel grifting their parents' friends. So they're really keen not to go along with this, then everyone just starts giving them money. Am I to believe that they made $800 between them?
Yeah, I think so, which...
Ross makes reference to earning $400, and for two of them just turning up, like, I would say if I was Jack and Judy's parents, one of the best things about not having to go to the wedding is not having to give a present. It's mad that they turn up with a giant check. Especially if you weren't invited. Yeah, well, exactly. To turn up with a couple hundred dollars as a check or something is wild, isn't it?
There are some great Rachel lines in this as well. The description of her fictional veil being made of lace made by blind Belgian nuns.
Yeah, she takes a huge leap from the idea that no one was there so she can sort of make up her dream wedding to making up like one that is physically not plausible, you know?
It's a bold move to claim that your veil was so intricate that it blinded some nuns. like that's an odd thing to sort of brag and be like, that thing that I wore, it seriously disabled several people.
Yeah. And then you get the dove who flew in and gave her put the ring on her finger and stuff.
And when she says the ring was the size of my fist, why isn't she wearing it?
why is no one wearing any wedding rings? That's the real problem here, isn't it? The first thing you would say if someone referenced their wedding ring, just don't reference it, Rachel. No one's asking. You get away with it. But as soon as you reference it, wouldn't they just be like, where is it? Why are you not wearing it?
Yeah.
And Annie Leibovitz is the official wedding photographer. I mean...
Should I know who that is?
She's a very famous photographer.
Right. There's also, I think... I wonder how conscious it is, but the whole point of this Ross and Rachel storyline in the end seems to be to sort of draw attention to the fact how, you know, their story could have ended differently and they could be engaged, and Ross obviously got close to proposing because he thought it all through, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And it's kind of this slow burn of Ross and Rachel being fated to be together, and maybe that's just... maybe I wonder how conscious it is that that might be sort of warming up again here in the latter stages of Friends.
Yeah, still a couple of years before they get them back together, isn't it? But they've clearly got their eye on that as the sort of the end game, haven't they?
Yeah.
When Russell says, that is how I was going to propose, Rachel says a really weird thing. She says, that would have been very hard to say no to, as if that would be the default thing.
Yeah.
Like, when you get proposed to, you're trying hard to say no, but sometimes you just make it very impossible. Like, had they been together, you'd like to think she would have been considering saying yes anyway.
Yeah.
And she also makes reference to, when Ross tells her to basically pipe down, she says, this may be the only wedding I ever have. She already had two.
Yeah, that's true.
She already had a wedding with Barry, and she's been married to Ross in Vegas. Like, how many weddings do you need, woman? But yeah, you're right. We get that sort of poignant moment at the end, don't we? And that is the sort of the start of that storyline, I guess. Well, I guess Emma was, but it sort of leads us all the way through to the grand finale. And then we get Phoebe and Parker's breakup, which is... contains some excellent lines, and then sort of Parker bursts in at the end and says, isn't this the best fight you've ever had? I think Parker's an excellent character. That's all I've got to say. I think Alec Baldwin's excellent in this episode.
Yeah, he is. He's very good.
Very strong Baldwin. Should we do 50% of the quizzes we've been sent?
Should we do our favourite lines from the episode first?
Should we play some music first?
Yeah.
Top three lines?
I like Nana, who would so want to be here, but she can't because she's dead. The sort of slow emphasis.
That's on my list too. That's so... the way that's delivered is so funny, isn't it?
Also, one of my favourite lines in the whole thing is Jack Geller's very sincere, I just wish Nana were alive to hear Ross's toast.
Chris makes reference to his favourite line in the episode is Jack's, why don't I remember this dog?
Yeah, that's another great one.
Which is very strong.
And I also like Phoebe talking about people doing, is it some sort of bunny hop with people acting like animals to music? Come on!
Yeah. Carrie Anna said some of her favourite lines of the episode in her request as well. She liked, remember, she's dead, okay? Her and Anna gone, as she's passing around the picture of the dog. And she also likes Phoebe saying, I'm a positive person. You're like Santa Claus on Prozac at Disneyland getting laid when they're having the breakup at the end, Phoebe and Parker. A lot of Alec Baldwin's lines I think are hilarious. I really like just the throwaway, like, what a fantastically well-lit hallway. Like, finding such niche details to be positive about. And then when Phoebe says, let's play the game of who can stay quiet the longest.
Yes.
Or Jenga.
And the sort of glee that Phoebe sort of suggests that game with, like, yeah, trying to sort of drum up some enthusiasm for it.
Yeah, and just the way his face when he says, or Jenga. But I think my favourite line of the whole episode, actually, is right at the start, when the whole slightly strange bit where he's touching Rachel's belly because the baby's in it. He's like, is there anything in the world more miraculous? Ooh, a picture of a dog.
Yeah.
And it's just very frenzy. It's the sort of thing you can imagine Joey saying, actually, in a different context, isn't it? But just the way he delivers that again, I thought was very, very good. So them's our favourite lines. Would you like to do a quiz now,
yes,
Pete?
This is from Kerry. Kerry's quiz.
Okay.
Question one. How does Parker treat Phoebe?
It's like a queen and then also like something else in the bed, isn't it?
Like the queen she is, except at night when it's like the naughty girl she is.
Right, there it is, yeah.
Not
going to give myself a point for that, I'm afraid. Wrong.
Question two, what couldn't Monica get because Chi-Chi needed knee surgery?
Braces.
Correct. Question three, what did Joey do with the oyster booger he slipped on?
Ooh.
I know this.
I might have been the bit I fell asleep in. I can't remember. Go on.
Wipes it on Chandler's coat.
Well done. You can have a point for that.
Thanks. Number four. What tear-jerking moment from a film is one of Monica's desperate attempts to get people to cry?
I should know that. I can hear her saying it, but it's gone right out of my brain. What is it?
Deborah saying goodbye to her children in terms of endearment.
Yeah, terms of endearment. Anytime people reference a film that I haven't seen, I immediately forget the reference. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in Friends or in anything. And if it's something you know, you'll always remember it. But I haven't seen Terms of Endearment, guys. What can I say?
Dave, you're going to end this on a high because you've already answered this one. Yeah. Question five. What game $400. Does Parker want to play?
All right. No. Jenga.
Yes.
Yes.
That ends the quiz.
There it is. Whoop, there it is.
Hey, want to know what next week's episode is?
I do.
We don't have a quiz for it.
Amy?
It's your time to shine. First time in the series?
Back you come. First time this year.
It's the one where Rachel is late. We're staying in season 8.
Just jumping ahead a few eps, are we?
To episode 22, yeah.
Yeah, just literally four eps later. There you go. One quiz, please, Amy, if you're listening. If you're not, there'll be no quiz.
See. They'll send the podcast.
Goodbye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.